9:35. If you could please rise for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Harris?
Here.
Trustee Gedrick?
Here.
Trustee Raffner?
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart?
Here.
Trustee Gass?
Here.
Trustee Dennis?
Here.
Are there any modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there anyone visiting or on the staff would like to see an item moved up or down on the agenda? I bet you Nathan likes to his spot on the agenda right where it is right now. Well, up farther. is there a motion to approve the agenda as submitted?
So moved.
Trustee Gedrick, is there a second? Trustee Dart. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Announcements.
The budget hearing will be held next Tuesday, November 25th at 6:30 p.m. here at the Alloway Village Hall.
The budget deliberations are also recorded, and are those posted?
Yes, they're on the website.
Okay. Any other announcements?
I just want to remind everyone, I left these in your mailbox. The Village will be hosting a presentation by the state on the benefits of listing your home on the National Register. That will be at Webster Avenue School, December 3rd at 6 p.m.
Thank you. Trevor, do you think you could send an Outlook request out to the board, or have you done that? Can you send an Outlook request to the board? Thank you. Any other announcements?
Steve, are you going to talk about ball
announcements? No.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item four, presentation by Nathan Qualls from the Metropolitan Sewage District.
Good evening. Nathan Qualls with New Water. I'm the Director of Technical Services. I also have Tom Sigmund with us from New Water. He's the Executive Director. Appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you, fill you in on what's new at New Water. Want to talk about a couple of things today. Our resource recovery and electrical energy project, the R2E2 project, major capital project we have underway now, as well as our 2015 budget impacts, and then the adaptive management that we are evaluating with regards to our permit requirements, phosphorus loads into Fox River. So appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. So the Resource Recovery and Electrical Energy Project, the R2E2 project, is a replacement of our current solids handling portion of our facility in Green Bay. The drivers for this project are environmental regulations on the air side. We have a Title V air permit, and that stringent requirements coming down from the EPA with regards to that. We also have aging infrastructure. The current solids handling facility, most of that equipment will be at an age of about 45 years when we finally replace it with this project. And then also capacity requirements. We just don't have enough evaporative capacity through our current solids handling facility, and so that needs to be upgraded. One of the exciting things about the R2E2 project is through implementation will yield approximately 50% purchased energy savings, which is about $4 million total, and reducing that in half to about $2 million. So some significant savings there. We have preliminary construction is underway on a contract to build a new switchgear facility, essentially the electrical distribution around our Green Bay facility, and clear the way of utilities where this new building and process is going to be sited. So that is a $6 million project that we have currently underway. And then we are reaching completion of the design phase of the larger construction project. We hope to be bidding that project early next year, February, March time. We have procurement of major equipment underway. So we have purchased a fluidized bed reactor. That is a $21 million piece of equipment and design. So that has already taken place, and we are working in parallel designing that reactor alongside the rest of the solids handling facility. We performed value engineering during the course of design to make sure as we manage our budget that these dollars are being spent in the right fashion, on the right things. We've prioritized project pieces, and if we do have to make cuts to the project due to budget constraints, we make sure we have them prioritized correctly and stay within our capital ceiling. We are scheduled to go online, essentially operational with this project in late 2017. So switching gears here to the New Water 2015 budget, we have some major drivers of this budget, including a 10% loss in VOD loading, which is VOD is one of our parameters that we charge for wastewater services. And as especially large industrial facilities in our service area pre-treat and reduce the amount of VOD that comes to us, that is a rate pressure that drives rates upwards. We are continuing to fund other, along with other essential capital projects, but continuing to build funding capacity for the R2E2 project debt and starting the implementation of the adaptive management program. So this chart depicts the drop in VOD load that I mentioned. You can see the blue line over the past couple of years has declined. So that's the organic loading to the facility is declining and thus a pressure upwards on the rate. You can see that the flow and TSS is total suspended solids, that's another one of our billing parameters. You can see that those have been holding pretty steady, but the VOD has seen some sharp declines in recent years. For our proposed expenses, showing 2014 budget, where we're projecting the end of 14 to be, and then the 2015 budget, you can see for operations and maintenance, we are slightly below the 2014 budget. So we are working very hard to hold those operational costs as steady as we can. As you can see, the debt service and annual capital is really the major driver for the budget, paying for these large infrastructure, heavy capital projects. That is the large increase from 2014 to 2015. This is a distribution of our expenses, so we're at about 51% salaries and benefits, 12% power, and 11% maintenance, a number of, and then natural gas and fuel oil, another energy component, another 7%, contracted services at about 9%. So this chart here shows us the municipal rate and the total combined rate for 1,000 gallons, that is off a typical municipal wastewater discharge. And so we are seeing an increase between 2014 and 2015 of about 9.9%. We have a large increase in VOD and TSS, some small decreases in phosphorus TKN, and increase in fixed charge. That nets out at, for a typical municipal wastewater, like I said, at 9.9% increase. So maybe not real easy to see here, but what we have showing here is what we feel is at stake with regards to water quality in Lower Green Bay and the Fox River. This is a snapshot shortly after a rain event showing large amounts of sediment being discharged into Lower Green Bay from the mouth of the Fox River. And our facility is just at the mouth of the river there, upstream from the discharge into the Lower Green Bay. But this is a very event-driven system that during storm events, there's a large amount of runoff from both urban and agricultural areas and a large amount of sediment and nutrients depositing into Green Bay, causing water quality problems. And regulations around these are starting to also impact us in other ways.
Nathan, what will that picture look like after the R2E2 project's complete?
That will not change. So that of course is after a rain event, and there's a large sort of plume that generates, and then a few days later that clears up. It's not quite as evident where you see that brown plume. So the R2E2 project will not impact that. We really have a small impact on what that looks like, even the liquid discharge from our facility. This is all the runoff from agricultural areas distributing from the watershed down through the Fox River and into the bay. So this pie chart here is to depict the sources of phosphorus into the Fox River. 45.5% from agricultural, municipal wastewater treatment facilities like New Water are at about 15-16%. We are approximately 3-4% of the phosphorus entering the bay. So you can see where this is heading. With our current permit, we have regulatory pressures on phosphorus discharges, and to correct that strictly from our facility and building infrastructure to treat the wastewater that flows through our facility could cost anywhere from $220 to $400 million. Even though we're at about 3-4% of the phosphorus entering the Fox River, there's much bigger sources of phosphorus out there, and you can see in order to meet the water quality standards for the Lower Fox River, as demonstrated through the TMDL, is a huge sum of money. And what we've been working towards is trying to make a determination if building infrastructure at our facility is the best use of our customers' money, or if pursuing another route called adaptive management is the right way to proceed. We are in year one of our current permit timeline, and in year four, we have to make a determination if we are going to pursue additional treatment at our facility, which could cost $220 million or more, or pursue adaptive management, which we feel is a much less expensive route, as well as reduces more phosphorus into the Fox River and the Green Bay than what treating at our facility can occur. So we're looking at proving this out, making this determination in one way through a pilot project that we have underway in Silver Creek. We have a 3-4 year time period here to make this determination, and this is one aspect to help us do that. We have a number of partnerships associated with this project, including the Oneida Tribe. We are essentially monitoring this stream now. So we are going to be taking water samples, seeing what this stream looks like as a baseline for water quality. And then over this time period, going to be implementing best management practices in part on agricultural land, potentially buffer strips and along this creek, those types of measures, and see what water quality improves, if we're seeing less phosphorus in that waterway, which eventually feeds into the Fox River and into the bay. So this is one way that we can evaluate the effectiveness of adaptive management. Is it going to be less expensive, and is it going to improve water quality? Two things that we feel are most important. Number one, our best use of our customers' dollars, and then number two, achieving water quality.
A couple of questions. Is the university helping out with this project?
Yes.
Okay. Are students involved?
I believe they are, but it's through Kevin Furman.
Right. That's who the MB. And then secondly, if you go with the former and you actually have to build a couple of $100 million worth of infrastructure to take the phosphorus out, are there any uses for the phosphorus that you remove?
At that point, likely not. So at the sort of the end of our current treatment facility, there's likely no real byproduct that might be beneficial. Through the R2E2 project, one of the things that we are implementing, I could have focused a little bit on it, I'll mention it briefly, is nutrient recovery. So phosphorus and ammonia are heavily concentrated at a certain part of our solids handling facility or our future solids handling facility, and that is really ripe for nutrient recovery and the production of a sand type of fertilizer. So we are implementing that as part of the R2E2 project. So we will be producing a beneficial reuse product of phosphorus and nitrogen, phosphorus and ammonia. And what that's really going to do for us, it's not really going to impact the amount of phosphorus that we discharge into the river. It's just going to, number one, provide a beneficial reuse product and a revenue source for New Water, but also reduce the amount of chemical that we might have to add in the liquid treatment system in order to meet our permit.
Okay.
So the
output from the facility is still going to be the same.
Right.
But you're going to have to use less chemicals to get to that point, and you'll have a revenue stream for the byproduct.
That's correct.
So that you're going to be saving money on chemicals, and you're going to be earning money on selling the byproduct. What's the market for the byproduct? Most of the fertilizers that we're using in Alloway, they don't have phosphorus in them, so who buys this?
So it would not be a household use type of product. So we will be entering into a purchase agreement with the vendor of this equipment. So we will have a long-term agreement. We set a price for that fertilizer, and they will take everything that we produce. And as the market for fertilizer goes up and down, that price that they pay us will be indexed off of that and will go up and down based on the market. So we will have a buyer for this product with this vendor of the equipment.
And then any sort of budget projections that you are working with regard to, if you have to build the infrastructure, do they include the decrease in expenses for chemicals and the increase in revenue for selling the byproduct to the vendor, or is it just for the creation of the system?
Those will likely show up for the first time in around 2017-2018 budget, so when we're actually implementing the R2E2 project, and then we will begin to take a look at, okay, with the new operations, reduced energy purchase like we discussed, nutrient fertilizer revenue coming in, decreased chemical usage, those will play into the budget for 17-18.
Thanks.
So this is kind of the picture of status quo around some of the streams around the areas. Of course, cows grazing and lounging in the waterway, and really no prevention of any of those nutrients and sediment from entering the creek during a large rain event. This shows the potential for what those areas can look like as buffer strips can grow up and become a sediment trap and nutrient trap, so preventing those nutrients from entering the waterways. And that is really all I have to present. I'd be happy to open it up to any questions.
The 10% loss of the BOD loading, do you anticipate that will increase as other large users try to do their own pre-treating?
Well, there are industries that are continuing to look at that. We continually work with those industries and find out what their plans are. We try to get as much advance notice if that's going to continue. We don't have anything for 2015. You know, that's the results of us working with them is finding out, okay, where do we see them discharging, and that's reflective of that. We will do that same procedure again next year and continue to pull, but we are seeing some interest in questioning about that.
Do you have an index of the major contributors to BOT and what the impact would be on those stranded on the island if they were to leave?
We have that list. We know, you know, who our major contributors are. I don't believe an analysis has been done to say if they left or, you know, pre-treated or left the system, what would that impact? We do that as we find that information out. Tom, unless you're aware of anything else, Tom, on that.
What we saw last year was about 20% drop in BOD, and what we're seeing for 2015 is, for the most part, it's Fox River Fiber down to pier completing installation of the pretreatment facility. So they had part of it for 2014, and they're finishing up by 2015, so that's their reduction. They should be pretty stable. They have an anaerobic system. It's probably not going to do any better treatment than it's doing right now. There are some other industries that are looking at it. They're making business case presentations to their corporate boards, and as best as we know, we talk to them each year. So far, they're saying that they haven't. It hasn't made it to the top to for that project to get built. So we hope as our rates start to level off once the R2E2 facility is fully funded, that's something that will take some of the pressure off of them.
I guess my question was, though, do we know, you must know who's contributing what to BOD, and you must have a rank-ordered list, and you must know that if the number one contributor on the list decides to pre-treat, what impact that would have on everyone else.
And that was Fox River Fiber, and we're seeing last year and this year. So of that 9.9% increase for 2015, probably a good third of it comes from the reduction of the BOT.
I guess I'm interested in the whole list, though. I'm kind of worried about who's the next Fox River Fiber, and if number two on the list drops out, what does that mean for the rest of us? If 2 through 5 drop out, it doesn't strike me as I think you have the numbers, right? You have a bill. You have bills you have to pay, and if people drop out and they contribute less BOD, you still have the same bills, but the bills are left to be taken care of by those who haven't reduced their BOD. So I'm wondering, can you share that information?
We certainly can. Fox River Fiber was the largest single industry discharging BOD, probably maybe twice as much as the next one, which I think is formerly known as Tilman and Xperra. And then it drops off quite quickly from that. We can share that with Craig.
And do we know the impact of if they were to drop out, what implications that would have for the remaining?
It depends on what type of pretreatment they put in and when they would put it in. So we don't really run the scenarios as to, because they'll decide what pretreatment their level they want to go to.
Thank you.
Mr. Rock. This is my first year at this, so I've been given a year to ask stupid questions.
The time's up.
So the decrease in BOD puts pressure on rates, and your 2014 expenses to 2015 expenses, there's an increase of about $2 million, I thought I saw,
mostly
in expenses.
Mostly due to the debt service, but in operation and maintenance, operational expenses is flat, if not slightly down from 2014's budget.
Total expenses a little under $2 million. this.
A little under 2 million.
A little under 2 million.
What percentage of that 2 million would be tagged to alloy?
Oh, I know that. I believe we've had that pie chart in the past. I believe alloy is in the vicinity of 8 to 9% of the total revenue to GBMC. I believe that's about right.
So does that mean out of that $2 million, you're looking for about $200,000 out of alloy rate revenue?
Sure. I mean, as Nathan showed, the rate increases are not across all of the parameters. You as a community, we measure your flow, we sample it, and we do an analysis on the strength parameters. And you see volume, you know, didn't go up as much because primarily the R2E2 project is driven by total suspended solids and the BOD. So that's where most of the rate increase is, in those two parameters. So it is probably not as great on your community because some of the more industrial dischargers are coming from some of the other communities, such as DePere and Green Bay.
So what kind of a rate increase can our residents expect in 2015?
I would, I'll have to work with Craig to figure out how you factor in your costs, our costs. I think I have some information that from an overall increase in cost.
Well, you're looking at Craig Art. I mean, we treat it basically as a pass through, right? We don't pass through the increase in the rates from new water, we don't add on top of that.
Actually, our proposed rate increase for 2015 would be, I believe it's 6.7%, even though the GBMSD rate increase is 9.9%, because of all the other factors that go into our budget. So we actually have a little lower rate increase than what is being passed to us.
For 2014, the GBMSD budgeted cost to alloy was right about $1.6 million. For 2015, it's a little over $1.7 million. So, in general, it's about $150,000 more in 15 than it was budgeted for in 2014.
And has your budget been approved in 2015?
It'll go to our commission on December 4th.
Okay. Is there a way to avoid your increase? Like, if someone came to you and said, okay, guys, your $2 million is about a 10% increase, how do you take 10% out of what you're doing today?
We have worked as hard as we can to keep our O&M costs, which are about 53% of our budget. You can see that the O&M cost budget is going down from 14 to 15. It's in the capital. We are on a track for this solids project to get ourselves to the point of being able to bond that project without a significant, a larger than 10% rate increase in the year. And so that's what track we're on. So we stayed on that track. We really can't back away from the capital at this point.
51% of your budget's labor, though, right? Salary? I thought I saw that in the pie chart.
51% of the operating the O&M budget is labor. Salaries and benefits, yes.
And do you foresee in additional increases in the coming years?
In
rates?
Yes. We when we started the R2E2 project and did our public hearings a few years ago, we projected 9 to 10% rate increases each year for 2013, 14, 15, and 16. So we probably going to still be on that track.
So as a collective community, how do we avoid that?
How do we avoid it?
Yeah.
Well, what we have are environmental regulations, which continue to get more stringent. and we have aging infrastructure which needs to be replaced. It has been suggested, should we have saved, collected the money over the last 20 years and saved it up, and that's not how the commission had chosen to do things in the past, so we bond for it, and then we have to collect, and then we'll collect from our customers over the next 20 years when that bond is being paid off. So we have aging infrastructures. We have, as an example of one of the things that Nathan showed was the phosphorus rules, which is a new rule coming to us. We do not have a choice on that. We don't have the ability to tell the DNR we're not going to comply with the rules.
And I know I'm sure you do your best, but after seeing that picture, and after it's not going to have that big of an impact. So what we're doing is managing to an EPA requirement, but we're not really making an impact on the environment.
Well, that's why our utility is one of the utilities worked with DNR about 5 years ago to try to get some flexibility into the rules to allow, because it truly doesn't make any sense. Phosphorus is discharged to the bay in a year period. New water from its two treatment plants discharged about 2.5% of that. If we cut that down to 1%, which is about what we need to cut it down to, you won't notice the difference.
No.
So that doesn't make a lot of sense. But it is a regulatory, it's there, it's on the books, we've got to do something. So we look to work with other parties to do something at a lower cost for our customers that we believe can have a net benefit to the environment. And that's this whole adaptive management pilot project to see if we can actually make that work. It's working with a lot of farmers. It's going to be a very challenging project that we're working through.
Thank you.
Trustee Harris?
Would you mind going back to about the third slide where you broke down the budget versus the actual? There we go. So debt service is going up by about $2 million from year over year. And it's, let me back up to keeping the OEM, O&M, where it is admirable. I know how difficult that can be. What was the 2013 amount for debt service? Was it also in the $14 million category, or is it jumped as well from 2013?
Well, for 2013, it was about $11 million.
Okay, so it also has jumped year over year. That's where we're going to see our increase. I didn't know.
It's in the capital.
That's how you're funding the R2E2 project.
Correct.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it had been stagnant since 2013.
No, we had started ramping up the capital rates since we were back 2012. So.
Thank you.
Tom, you know what I'm going to ask, right?
Sure.
Are your folks getting raises this year?
They are.
I just wrote that down.
What's the average percent raise for the?
I don't know that. We have, we have a pay program where our employees are paid on a. Some are paid at the bottom of their scale, and as they move through their pay plan, they would get a raise if they have had good performance.
Anyone that's at the mid or upper range of their pay scale who's also getting a raise? Is everyone getting a raise?
There is a market adjustment to kind of bring the market for our employees kind of up to where they should be for the market. But those employees that are at or near the top of their pay grade or who have not had satisfactory performance are not getting an increase.
Isn't there a study that was recommended that you not give increases because you were actually above market in many areas?
That was 3 years ago.
And you?
And we have caught up.
Okay. And then every year I mention this. I don't agree with when you have your budget meetings. We have ours at night, and we still only get a handful of people. But we're at least trying to get the public as involved as possible. And when you have your meetings during the day, they're 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, right, that they start, you just can't expect to engage the public. So I don't agree with when you're holding your meetings, and I also don't agree with the fact that your commission doesn't have contact information on the website. I know you've told me we can contact you, but these are the folks who are making the final decisions, and I would no way allow this group not to have contact information on our website. They're elected to these positions. We make the final decisions, and I think you need to do that with your commissioners. I do appreciate the rate stabilization fund and some of the input that you've taken from the public works director so that we don't have these big ebbs and flows in the rates for our residents.
The couple of the companies that are involved with the process of the Foxwood Fiber, as you mentioned, Georgia Pacific, JBS, Pioneer Mill, Tillman U.S. Paper Mills, Procter & Gamble, and Cinemax. I don't know what the percentages are.
Right. And I probably could have guessed at the usual suspects, but I'm just wondering, you know, what's third on the list, and if they decide to do what Fox River Fiber did, what does that mean for the rest of us? We're in a tough position in Alloway, right? We have no industrial whatsoever, and then we're largely residential, and so you can imagine that the BOD is going to be pretty consistent. People do what they do in their homes to lead to BOD, and so we're just kind of sitting here wondering when the next major contributor is going to back out and have a serious impact on our community. So that's the kind of thing that's on my mind, that even if there's nothing I can do about it, I'm kind of worried about, you know, the second and third place folks and our highest contributors, and if they were to decide to. And maybe as a community we can convince some of these industrial customers to stay in the game and try to address this as a community rather than each individual company or each individual community deciding they're going to break away and pre-treat and leave the belt to the rest of us. Because I get it. You have infrastructure, you have rules that you have to follow, you have infrastructure that you might have to build. Those are expenses, and so you've got to pay the bills, and you've got to get the money somewhere, and if someone's not contributing, all the others are going to have to up the ante in terms of what they contribute. So.
We do stay in touch with those industrial customers. We try to understand what their needs are, do what we can within the limits that we have. Got to realize, though, that they are
businesses.
They make decisions in, you know, in their best interest, and we try to do the best we can.
If there's any way that you can think of that the communities can get involved in making your case to these large customers that they should stay in the system, whether that's some incentives by the municipality in which the business resides or something, let us know what you think we can do.
Where is the efficiency percentage of the anaerobic digestion to energy production? Are you capable of increasing your capacities in that, or is that something that's stabilized where it's at and remains?
So we don't have anaerobic digestion now at our facilities. The R2E2 project will install that. So one of the things that we're looking at doing is trying to find co-digestate wastes, high-strength wastes that we can add to the municipal wastewater solids in those digesters to boost gas production and increase electrical energy generation.
Where do you see that as a percentage, though?
How much
you're able to contribute back into the budget from actual generation of electricity by putting in the digesters?
We'll have about $1 million of purchased electrical energy offset by installing the anaerobic digestion, installing the cogen system.
So we would use that electrical energy on site basically to avoid buying utility power.
Okay. And is there a capability of expansion of that?
There is the capability of that. If we can find enough waste products that are good for digestion and get those in the digesters, we will see more than that.
Has the group itself contacted any of the corporate farms that are out there in regards to their excess?
We've done a study for co-digestates early on in the R2E2 project. Agricultural wastes don't really work well for us in our type of digester. We're looking for a slightly different waste. Whether or not they reached out to the agricultural community in that, I don't recall. I think we were more looking for high-strength liquid industrial waste.
So we're looking mostly to the way from cheese manufacturing, milk production, the really high-strength way as opposed to not animal manure. We've had contacts with them, and since we're 3 years off from having that facility to take the waste in, the conversations are not especially serious.
I see that you've studied several different systems. I was just curious as to whether it didn't go as far as efficiency. You're saying you have not done that.
We have not selected specific additional co-digestates to come to our facility, in part because of that 3-year gap between now and when we can actually bring them on board. But it is something we plan to do over the coming years before we have the facility installed. Identify those wastes.
And where is this in relation to the folks with the Seven Generations Project that we were talking about? This kind of has some parallels going on between them.
Not a lot of parallels. The Seven, we're basically taking municipal wastewater, the solid generated from municipal wastewater, very, very consistent, very homogeneous material, and digesting it to generate gas and then harvesting the gas. The as best as I know, the Seven Generations proposal was that the municipal solid waste, which is quite a different material entirely, and then use it's a pyrolysis process, which I don't fully understand all the details about. But they were generating a digester gas they were generating gas. It's a totally different process and different waste to input.
Any further questions? The budget hearing is December 4th.
It is December 4th.
At
8:30 a.m.
December 4th at 8:30 a.m. at your facility.
We will if you have any written comments, we certainly would make the commission aware of that, take that into the record, and we'll also take in-person comments as well.
Do you know when in that meeting you'll be entertaining? Because sometimes you don't entertain public comments.
It's going to be right away.
It'll be right at 8:30.
Okay, it's the first thing on the agenda.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions? Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good to meet you, Nathan. Public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening? Mr. Zeller, would you like to speak?
Good evening.
Good evening.
For the record, Paul Zeller, and the address is 3228 Bidders Court. And I promise, don't worry, everything that I have to say to you is on this card.
So very small print.
So I appreciate the opportunity to address the board, and I appreciate the voters of Brown County electing me to the office of Brown County Treasurer. So if you voted for me, I thank you very much. If you did not, I assure you I'll still send you a property tax bill. but on a serious note, Steve and I had talked over a few weeks, over the last few weeks, and I just wanted to reconnect with you and give you some little background information about the treasurer's office and my plans for that office. Just briefly, the treasurer's office has three main functions, and those functions are handled by a modest staff of five people. And I ran for the vacancy that was had occurred due to the retirement of the current treasurer midterm. So I'm assuming the balance of the treasurer's term, and the treasurer's office collects the property taxes for the entire county and then disperses the property tax revenue to the individual taxing entities that are listed on the bill. And in addition to that, we maintain cash flow and available funds for all the departments of the county, all of the county departments. And then the treasurer's office invests the short-term and the long-term funds that are investable for whatever duration that are reserves and are short-term investable funds. So that's the big picture of the function of the office. But within those three activities that the office does, I had some ideas to implement some changes to the office, which hadn't changed a whole lot through many years under very capable leadership, previous leadership. But my plan is to modernize things a bit, and I just want to discuss two plans and goals that I have, and certainly invite any input that municipal officials have. But before and during the election, I tried to make it to all the municipal meetings throughout the county, whether it be town meetings, village meetings, and introduce myself, because the treasurer's office serves not just the taxpayers, but also the municipal clerks and treasurers, which are directly involved in translating or transferring all of your work, your budget work, to the county in the form of a tax rate, and then that's applied to the assessed value of each property. So I heard through the election process from the clerks and treasurers that they rely on the office for technical and accounting help. So I'm making it a point to have a relationship and a connection, communication with all the municipalities, especially the townships that don't have the staff to do some of the accounting work. So that's one of my goals. And another goal within that same customer service vein is to try to improve the ability of taxpayers to pay their taxes in person. And believe it or not, there are quite a few taxpayers that still want to pay in person and meet that date of December 31st or January 31st. So I have some ideas that I have yet to formalize, but I'd like to try to make that an easier process for some of the older taxpayers or are not as physically able to get right to the office. And so that's yet to be flushed out in terms of how I do that. But a really significant goal that I have is, because the treasurer's office workflow fluctuates so much during the year, there are 1,400 hours of LTE, limited term employee hours, that is budgeted for and has been budgeted for through the last 5 years, and those hours are used to hire, to bring on this additional help during the crush of the tax season. And looking at that, it occurred to me that that's a time of the year when college students are available and are, from what I heard throughout my campaign, are really willing to take on a role and in an internship. And I've got a formal internship program put together to use some of that young and old, you know, student brain power to come on board. It's really a catch-22 for these students. They need experience to get a job, and they need a job to get experience as a resume builder. So I think of no better venue or avenue to provide that than an office like the treasurer's office that has these very high periods of activity that we could get help with, and then in turn those students take that experience back and somehow contribute to the community upon graduation or in a summer internship at a company. I just want to give students a frontline experience where they're actually on the in the community and dealing with customers, and I view the taxpayers as the customers to the treasurer's office. So those are just two ideas that I have. I wanted to share with you, and ask you to please don't be a stranger, and remember that I sat in your in your shoes for many years, and I still live in Alloway here. So. Please, I invite your ideas and criticisms, and in terms of, I can't do anything about your taxes, so don't complain about that. That all comes back to you, municipal. I'm directing that right back where it belongs. But anyway, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you, and to my friends. Mm-hmm. And still, I still count these folks as friends. And Debbie, that includes you too. Okay.
Well, thank you. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it, sir.
That was all on that card?
If I take over 5 minutes.
Mr. O'Rourke, would you like to speak?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue, and Becky Nyberg from Friends of the Fox River Trail just had to leave. She lives on Simonet. But we both wanted to speak to item number 11B that will be coming up. Friends of the Fox River Trail and the Alloway Walks and Bikes Committee are both in support of the crosswalk being installed on a temporary basis on Arrowhead Drive to Sunset Park. That would get you to from the Sunlight Park neighborhoods over to the Fox River Trail, which is the most popular trail in the state, one of the most popular trails in the state, and it encourages kids to be active and adults to be active. It encourages a healthy lifestyle, and we support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak this evening? All right, hearing none, we will move on to item 6, a public hearing to consider adopting ordinance 2014-25, repealing and recreating section 11.27, personal communication services of chapter 11, zoning code relating to mobile tower siting regulations. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to item 6? Hearing none, we will move on to item 7, action regarding the adoption of ordinance 2014-25. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast.
I will move to adopt ordinance 2014-25.
Is there a second? Trustee Rafter?
Yep.
Second. Discussion? Trevor, do you have anything to add? You've been shepherding this through the process all along.
Sure. This, like I said before, this pretty much outlines the powers that we are left with after the state's legislation was passed in the summer of last year. Went through this with our village attorney, and this is what we came up with. Something to note, residents still will be notified through the conditional use through a public notice. So that's not changing, but really the only thing that is changing is our ordinance.
And for the record, for as long as the record exists, I really protest this change that was made on our behalf without our significant input. And to me, it takes away, I've mentioned this before, there are lots of areas where I think that, most areas where I think that home rule needs to prevail, and the state and entities that are outside of our control seem to pick and choose those cases where they want to hand over responsibility and honor home rule, like making decisions about sexual offenders, some contentious issues that they don't want to address. And then the other areas like this where we absolutely should have the power to regulate and to establish our own ordinances, they're taking away control. And I won't even get into the unfunded mandates, but I want to go on record as saying that I strongly disagree with the intrusive action that the state is taking. Any further discussion?
I'll second your fine comment. Your umbrage. I will second your umbrage.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 8, action regarding the approval of resolution number 2014-16, authorizing intergovernmental cooperation agreement between the City of De Pere and the Village of Alloway to determine a portion of the common boundary line through detachment and annexation of territory. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Guest?
I will move to adopt.
Trustee Dart?
I'll second.
Discussion?
It's about time.
Further discussion?
We're in a growth of village.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 9. We have to wait a little bit premature. We have to wait until number 9 is adopted.
Just giving ourselves permission to adopt.
That's right. That one's a resolution. Action regarding the approval of ordinance number 2014-19, annexing territory to the Village of Alloway. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Dart?
Let's see. I move to approve the ordinance 2014-19.
Trustee Harris?
A second.
Second. Discussion? Are there any questions on the part of our visitors who about this issue? It's a bit of land down by the LeBron Yardway site that we're actually going to be annexing in the Village of Alloway and controlling, taking over from De Pere with the caveat or stipulation that they will have access to the property towards the river down there in case they would ever develop it. They would have access to that, but that access would come at no cost to the Village of Alloway. So there needs to be an extension of the Lebrun down towards the East River or sewer or water or anything like that. That would all be on the City of De Pere, the developer's dime. Did I summarize that correctly, folks?
Okay.
So that's what these items are all about. We should let you know that we did talk to the homeowners in that area to make sure that they were comfortable with the decisions that we were making tonight as well. Any further discussion on item 9? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 10, action regarding the approval of resolution number 2014-17, authorizing intergovernmental cooperation agreement between the City of De Pere and Village of Alloway, their LeBrun Street reconstruction and trail. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gendrick.
I would move to approve resolution number 2014-17 as you just read.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass seconds. Basically allow us to do some needed work on the road that leads down to the waste site and or the yard waste site and the trail connection. Any further discussion? Mr. Burton, anything to add? Besides a big sigh of relief, this is finally, we think, coming to some closure. For the record, this has no implications for the area of LeBron between East River Drive and Weibel. So to the west of East River Drive. We're talking about from East River Drive east.
I do have one question.
Yes.
So is the pier in... I'm trying to make it regular. Is the pier in agreement with everything that we're doing now? Okay.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. New business, item 11A.
Well, can we suspend the rules for just 1 minute? I'm a little disappointed in that Mr. Robson, property owner, was not here with us this evening, but I'll have to make a personal presentation to him. And Craig, if I overstep some boundaries, please forgive me, but I had to sign that. I will present to him. I suggested it to him in person, and he poo-pooed it, so I just want to add
that. Very nice.
I'll deliver this.
We should deliver that in one of our big orange trucks.
There you go.
They need the pole.
Titled it Robson Raceway.
That's right. I thought about putting 23 on there for the years he's been waiting. But
I would have called it the Robson Access.
The Robson Way. Anyway.
Very nice.
I'm disappointed he's not here.
Item 11A. This is from the Public Works meeting from November 13th. Approval of Safe Water, what's the acronym, Craig?
Safe Drinking Water.
Safe Drinking Water Fund. Reimbursement Resolution 2014-19. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast?
I move to adopt the recommendation of the Public Works Committee and to further adopt Resolution 2014-19.
Is there a second? Trustee Rafter seconds. Discussion? I need
yes.
A second to catch up here on my... Yeah, Trustee Harris, please.
What's the significance of the May 1st, 2015 date for not issuing bonds prior to that point?
It's an approximate date. The bonds may be issued before that or they may be later than that. They have to be issued by June 30th. So this resolution is an update of the resolution that we actually submitted. And the Department of Administration asked us to just update the resolution with new dates, basically is what they asked for. So that is just an approximate date for when the bond would actually be issued.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Item 11B, consideration of the interim crosswalks and Riverside Drive prior to project. Is there a motion with regard to this item?
I'll make the motion.
Trustee Gendrick, please.
Move to for consideration interim sidewalks and Riverside Drive prior to the Riverside Reconstruct project.
Okay, so you want them to consider it, right? We're not approving the
Correct.
Actual project to move forward
yeah,
with
lots of unanswered
collecting
questions.
Information. Okay,
correct.
To make sure, which I think was the recommendation of the Public Works Committee. Is there a second? I will second. Discussion. I guess this would be mainly for Craig and for the members of the Public Works Committee. It says crosswalks. Are we talking about only the one between Arrowhead and Sunset?
I think that's the most obvious one, but I think anything could be considered at this point. Lots of public support for it.
But are we talking about multiple crosswalks, or are we just talking about one crosswalk and we're thinking of multiple different locations?
Just one.
One, okay.
Great.
Oh, what is that?
Pardon?
I thought we were going to take a look at where we needed them temporarily, and if there was more than one... To be more than one. I didn't know. Were we talking about one on the north side as well? Like up by Alloway Avenue, or?
I don't think so.
We're talking about the one by Sunset Circle.
Okay.
Where we have sidewalks on.
I mean, it doesn't really matter right now. We can explore all the options of where we think one could go, and whether it's one or two or three, we can decide that when we actually vote on it. I just wanted to get a sense of where the committee was as to whether, especially if it's only temporary and there's going to be some cost to it and some a process through the DOT, that I know whether we're talking about one or if we're talking about five. And to me, there's a pretty big difference.
Yeah.
In fact, the difference is four. Trustee Gant.
No, I agree with Jim. You know, there's a lot of public support for it. It makes total sense. We definitely need that about pre-construction for the remodeled roadway. And this is basically just to authorize DPW to submit an application to the state so that we see what the DOT will require, because of course what they require will influence the cost of the project. I mean, if they require a hawk signal or something on there, I mean that'll dramatically increase the cost, but let's submit the application, tell them what they're going to put in it. I mean, there's definitely a public need for it, then see what the requirements are, and then we can figure out what we can do within the requirements. It's cost effective.
This has been said by many before. We have all these pieces in place, these elements in place. We've got the trail. We've just added access to the trail through the park. We have sidewalks in that area, and we've got no crosswalk, and so it really doesn't make too much sense the way it is that it sits right now. All right. Any further discussion on the motion in a second? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 11C, action regarding a dead-end traffic sign on Terraview Court. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Rafter?
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass?
Seconds.
Discussion?
It's a dead-end street. We're telling people to say it's a dead-end street. There's a lot of traffic that goes around, turns around, and it was a recommendation that came to Public Works, so it makes sense.
I see a recommendation that says no through street.
There was some discussion about that. I mean, we debated that because they kind of mean the same thing, but most people get dead-end better than they get no through street.
So the
it is recommended that a no through street.
I see it both ways. I had the same question. The proposal is the signage would read dead end, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we had a fairly lively discussion at the Public Works Committee about that and what worked better. And I think Trustee Gass suggested that when you see a no through street sign, you say in your own mind, does that mean it's a dead end? this answers the question.
So the lively debates we have at 7 a.m.
7 a.m. all caffeinated. Further discussion? All in favor?
Will Craig get a comment over there?
Oh, I'm sorry, Craig.
Well, I was just going to comment that when we put the agenda together for the board meeting, we made the items a little more generic, but because the Public Works Committee meeting was Thursday morning and we had to finish the minutes and get it in the package by Friday morning, we didn't adjust those couple of items on the board agenda. So that's why there's a little discrepancy. But what's in the minutes was what we had intended. That's where the dead end came.
Thank you. Did we vote on that yet?
We did.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 11D, action regarding a no parking area at the end of South Van Buren Street. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Genrick?
I would move to create no parking area at the end of South Van Buren Street, which is the section just abutting Heritage Hill State Park.
Is there a second?
Just a point of clarification. I mean, I think the recommendation was actually put a tollway zone in the yellow curbs.
Correct. That was part of the discussion at the meeting. I don't see it in the minutes.
Recommendation in the minutes.
Hold that one. Oh, I forgot this one. I would amend the motion to include tollway zone signage as well as curb painting and striping, whatever else we do there.
Is there a second? Trustee Dennis seconds. Craig, what are the rules for this? What's the difference between a tow-away zone and a no-parking? To me, if it's a no-parking zone, you can still tow someone away. Or is it just sort of a bigger shot over the bow that this is a tow-away zone?
It was actually a recommendation by Rick King based on his experience, and you can yellow the curve, but people will still park there, and they'll still block that access. We put tow-away zone there, and then it's easier for us to tow away a car, plus it's easier to enforce, and it's also a more direct recognition that it's no parking.
So it is just a bigger shot over the bow. That's
what it is.
Just like carrying
a bigger stick.
At one time, we've all parked out over the yellow curb, but when there's a tollway thing, we don't park there.
Well, I was thinking it would be no parking versus the tollway. There'd be a sign there. It would just say no parking. And if you park there anyway, and there's a yellow stripe and a sign, we're going to tow you away. But if no, a tollway zone works even better than I'm all for it. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I'm just a law-abiding citizen, though. Just item 11E, consideration of the Strombach sewer backup claim. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast.
I'll move to approve the payment of one half of the remaining claim amount.
Trustee Rafter.
Second.
Second. Discussion. I'd like to get a little background on this. Mm-hmm. Trustee Gast. Yes.
Well, I mean, in most of these cases that we get, the vast majority of them, we deny them, you know, because of the municipal immunity. That we almost got to know there's going to be a problem. And if we don't really know there's going to be a problem, then we're not responsible for it. I mean, it's a pretty tough standard for a claimant to meet. And so we legitimately deny most of them. I mean, even if you think that there might be a problem in a particular area, that's not specific enough to create municipal liability. But in this particular instance, there were two in relatively short order. And we were out there the first time, and we did the work in the system that we needed to do. And there might have been a question whether we should have noticed that there was some root infestation, because she had it cleaned out, but there was there was a root infestation. There was a question, maybe we should have caught it when we did our preliminary work. I'm not saying we missed something, but we could have missed something. And, this particular property owner has been very reasonable with the village. But it's just the fact that there's two. I mean, I'd be a little ticked off if I had one and me and my insurance company paid for it. And, in a relatively short order, I got another one. And it's because of the roots that were in the system, and they were there before. And I think sometimes the way we pressurize that, or water pressure. Sometimes we push the roots up and away a little bit, and then when the water pressure comes back out, they drop back down. So there's a question whether we may have some exposure, and there were, in fact, two backups in this particular home.
I think I know the answer to this question. What did the insurance company recommend?
Denial. And if I understand it correctly, correct me if I'm wrong. So, but since the insurance company said, no, you shouldn't pay the claim, if we want to pay the claim, it's ours.
Yeah.
The insurance companies aren't going to come because they said denial.
So there were two close together within a couple of weeks, did you say? Or how far apart were the incidents? A
couple months, I think.
Couple months?
3 or 4 weeks. They were close together.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
And how far apart physically were they? There was just back up into the house, but there wasn't anything compromised in the sewer lateral or anything like that. It was just blockage in the lateral.
Situations were back up into the home. Yes.
Okay.
And we know that her lateral was clear because that was taken care of by a private plumber that came in and took care of her lateral. So
the blockage was in their line.
Blockage, I'm sorry?
Was in our line, the sewer line. Or in the
both blockages were in our line. Trustee Harris?
Do we know that the problem has been solved and there won't be a third one?
We have taken care of it.
Okay. And then, according to the summary that we were presented with, we've already paid $500 that was voted on previously to do that?
I don't think so.
What tells you that?
I'm looking at the page that's entitled right Summary of Sewer Damage, and it, the way the dollars are written out, there's a $500 alleyway payments that took the balance from 3,500 and change to a little over 3,000 and change.
We didn't actually pay that $500. What happened was when the claim was filed with the residents' homeowners insurance, and the homeowners insurance contacted our insurance carrier, there is an option that many communities have, which is to pay the deductible for that resident, for their insurance. Our insurance carrier made a mistake and paid the deductible. Later on discovered that they paid the deductible, came back and notified us of that, but said they would not go back and deal with it. It was a mistake on their part. So it says alleyway payments, but we didn't actually make that payment. This happens to be the summary that Mrs. Strombach gave us.
No, I understand.
So that's why she put it down as alleyway payment.
Okay. Yeah. No, I understand who put it together. I just...
Yeah, that's
that gives more background on that part of it. But we know with as much certainty as we can get that this backup was not caused by any, for lack of better words, private trees. It would be trees that were on the right-of-way.
Yeah, this was a root blockage in the mainline sewer. And when we cleaned the sewer following our normal procedure, when we cleaned the sewer, that blockage apparently was pushed up and out of the way, and the main line functioned okay. When we pulled our equipment out, the blockage came back down. It was a large area of rust. So a couple weeks later, it backed up enough flow that it caused another backup into the home. We televised the line at that point, cleaned it and televised it, and found the rust. So we purchased a root cutter where we can clean sewers now, cut roots out. We went in and cleaned that sewer and cut the roots out and actually took those roots out of the sewer at the next manhole down. And it certainly was large enough to cause the problem.
And that's, I guess, what I was asking, whether or not we knew it was in the same location or whether we thought maybe, but it's pretty much in the same spot. Okay.
And in 4 weeks... In a couple of weeks, those roots wouldn't be able to grow if they weren't there before. So that's why at least I went along with it, because I had asked Craig if we saw those roots the first time, what would we have done? And we would have pulled them out. And the lady's request was very friendly and professional and... just ask for help. So.
Yeah, I think it's more than reasonable as well. Do we have a? Is there a reason? Is it a large expense, or does it take a lot of time if we do? If we televised the first time after we cleaned it to make sure that we could see what was in there, or is that an ordeal?
No, it's not something that we would normally do. And so, in a normal case, usually we don't find anything in the sewer. You know, we clean it as a matter of procedure, but we don't normally find problems. We're revising our procedure so that when we have a suspect, we're going to use our equipment televised and recheck it and make sure that we know exactly what the situation is in the sewer. There may be some cases where our equipment won't be able to televise and we may have to contract it out because of the length of the sewer. But that is something we're adding into our procedure.
Good.
We're also doing a evaluation of the whole system, and this is also part of the CMOP program. And we were working on it yesterday and today, an evaluation of the whole system. So we're going to target all those areas where we think we have root problems and make sure we have those on a routine program to keep those clean and keep those roots out. So that's a little touch-up or improvement that we're doing overall because of this situation. And then just to back to what Trustee Rafter said, the reason why I brought this forward, and Mrs. Strombach came to me and said, here's my situation, and would you please reconsider the situation because of the financial impact on me, and it happened twice. We sat down as staff and looked at it and went through the whole thing. And we came to the conclusion that we should bring this forward as something that we should deal with because we want to be fair to her. So.
One, just a second.
Is the half price on, are we splitting the cost of the second one? The second incident, or?
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Well, it's...
Why aren't we paying the whole thing? If we didn't do it right the first time, and we're kind of admitting that.
Well, because the first time, the standard immunity would apply, because we didn't know there was a problem at all.
Okay.
We had reason to know that there was a problem at all. It was after the first one, when we went in and attempted to clean out the line and check out the line, that we should have caught the problem which caused the second one. So the first one, the immunity applies to the second one.
Yeah.
Arguably, the immunity does not apply to. I mean, I'm not saying it definitely doesn't, but I think in this, under the circumstances of this particular instance, it makes sense to reimburse.
Right. I can understand that we shouldn't be liable for the first one because we didn't know it was going to happen, but we should be liable for our work. So we came in and did the first one, and we should have done it right. And so the second one, the homeowner shouldn't have any responsibility for, because
I think the key is she only asked for half. I mean, she was willing to pay half and offered it that way.
Well, and it's not so much that I think that we erred the second time. You know, I mean, sure, we could have maybe televised it right away and figured out that there was a wood issue in there. But, you know, we followed standard course at the time, which wasn't to do that. And the roots came back into the system after the pressure flow was released and clogged it up back up again. So, you know.
I'm glad to hear that you're reviewing the process. How do we know when we go in and clean something for the first time that it's on our in our part of the lateral? Just sort of when you start to hit something, the distance from where you go in?
The jetter may get stuck. We look in the manholes and see what comes out downstream. You know, they can tell when they're operating equipment when they run into obstructions. They can, by the way the equipment operates, they can tell. So it's a combination of things based on their experience.
And you have plans now, you say, not only to identify certain areas where you know you have to do routine cleaning, but are we going to try to look after we clean something out to go in there and see if we can determine to the best of our knowledge whether or not we've cleaned it out and gotten everything?
Yeah, we're going to do... And I don't know that it will be every case, but it will be a certain number of them, I guess, based on experience. We'll televise it shortly after and check it out. It doesn't have to be done the next day, but shortly after. Usually when we do televising work, we do it on a Friday when we have more staff available. But that's what we will do, and check out more of these sewers with our televising equipment that we now have.
So I understand we were following our procedure. We didn't do anything wrong. And technically we're not liable for this, but we did some work and it didn't. I'd be a little bit angry if someone came out to fix my refrigerator and they came out and they fixed it and then 2 days later it went bad again. They came out and they charged me just as much as they did the first time to fix the problem. And so I'm going to make a substitute motion that we cover the entire outstanding balance of $3,011.23 in this case. Is there a second to the substitute motion?
I second that motion.
Trustee Dennis seconds. Discussion? Trustee Rafter?
I applaud you for recommending that. When I was looking at this and seeing that State Farm paid $8,000 of the $11,500, I was assuming that Mrs. Strombach would have had to pay a deductible regardless. And so I think what she's asking us to do, and this is only an assumption on my part, is to pay the other deductible, basically, for the second.
Which would be the $1,505?
Right. My assumption is she would have had to pay a deductible on the first one. And I'm not opposed to your motion, but that's where I was coming from.
Depends, I think, on whether that's considered an ongoing issue and whether that's part of the same reconciliation of, I'm trying to think of a word that's used in insurance, event.
if it's part of the same event, there may not be a deductible. I don't know where you can satisfy it.
Yeah. I suspect that they're treated as two separate events.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, I applaud your motion.
Is there a way to find that out? And I agree. I don't think we need to pay her original deductible. But if it's this, if it's treated as the same event, then there isn't a second deductible.
What if we worked out the assumption we'll pay all but $500 of it? Because the first one was paid in error, so there would be everything except $500. Would that be an option to consider?
I think we should just
give
her a chance. What she's asking for.
That's, I think, where the committee discussion was.
A motion on the floor.
Yeah, I think I like that idea, Trustee Harris, that instead of sort of trying to guess at whether or not it's one event or two, what her deductible is, if we just do $500, everything but $500, that would work.
That covers all of the stuff that the insurance would not cover. You've had an incident take place. You're responsible for your deductible.
So you're suggesting $3,011 minus $500?
Yes. Are we starting to nitpick at this point?
2,500. Okay. Whatever that is, I'd like to propose that option. I'm not doing the math right away in my head, but 3,011.23 minus the 500. Trustee Dennis?
I agree.
That's the substitute motion on the floor. Further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Roll, please. Trustee Dennis?
Aye.
Trustee Gath?
No.
No.
Trustee Dart.
Oh, sorry, no.
Trustee Benno.
That's
too awesome.
As a yes. Noise.
Trustee Rafter.
No.
No. Trustee Gennard?
No.
Trustee Harris?
Yes.
The substitute motion fails. The motion on the floor is to reimburse $1,505.61. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 11F, approval of the Verizon lease agreement for Webster Avenue or Webster Water Tower site. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Genrich.
Move.
Anyone paying attention, apparently.
Move to approve a Verizon lease agreement for Webster Water Tower site.
Is there a second?
Aye.
Trustee Rafter, second. Discussion? Anything we need to know about this one?
We're getting good money.
Lots of good negotiation, I think, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, this culminates a number of months of, more like 24 months of the project development with Verizon to fit the site, fit it in the environment, design it the way we want, all of the features we want, the architectural look, and the agreement itself. And then finalizing this agreement, some of the things that we asked for from the Public Works Committee standpoint was an increase in the fee amount, some protection with regard to maintenance of the facility, the architectural style, and a few other things, and basically Verizon has gone along with our request. I think it's a very good agreement. There's a couple things they did not want to include in it, but we have them included in the engineering plans, the construction plans, for which the building permit will be issued. So the architectural style and some of those things are covered by the building permit. So I think this is a very nice opportunity for the village to generate revenue on that site. We are using Aerodyne, so this will take the place of that.
Oh, yeah.
And this does represent revenue for the water utility to help with the water utility rates.
Thank you. Further discussion? Trustee Gass.
I just want to, compliment Craig, for he's a bulldog on these kind of things. And, just like with Green Bay Met, he keeps going back and pushing the envelope and And he comes back and tells us when he thinks the envelope is about at the end of being pushed. So I just wanted to recognize him, because he did go back quite a few different times, and I think we got some favorable rates on this and a longer term, you know, a long term commitment. I think it's a good agreement.
You're here. Further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Action regarding the recommendation from Economic Development Committee to reduce their number of members to 7. I will make a motion to do so. Is there a second? Trustee Dart. Discussion? Trustee Dart?
I think there's still a little confusion for the makeup, but I think we want an uneven number, so 7 would make that an uneven number.
Notice you didn't want to use the word odd when it came to the committee that you're on. Okay, good.
Odd members.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries as well.
Question from that?
Reports and discussion, monthly report on the Neighborhood Watch revitalization.
Door to door. I've gotten a couple phone calls and in touch with several people. Haven't had anybody plan a meeting yet, but I have starter kits available if anybody knows of any kits continuing to send them my direction.
Are there areas we can target? It seems to me that we are pockets, like where ex-trustee Green lives on Beaupre and some other areas where they seem to be, or Calf Street, they seem to be kind of ripe for this set of things. So instead of, have we thought of taking a more proactive approach?
Yeah, those areas, they mentioned like Calf Street, and certain areas where I know there's been interest in the past, I've been trying to get to first.
But still no meetings or no organization from their end?
No. Also, with the neighborhood association, Trevor and I have started mailing. As I said, we've been looking through the meeting minutes from meetings over the summer, like Hilltop Place Apartments, the residents that were here and expressing their concerns over those issues, the ones on Half Street. We've been identifying the residents that were here in the areas and getting our address list together, and we've already started doing some mailings as far as different associations go as well.
Do we know where the current neighborhood watch programs existed in the past? I have a neighborhood watch sign on my street. I think it's still there. But I've lived there for, I don't know how many years now, since 2000.
You're the chairperson of that committee.
No wonder. Do we know where there are current, at least, signs for neighborhood watch?
As far as I know, there are pretty much signs everywhere.
There are.
Over the summer, my standard was post repainting done, which the department took a lot of them now. And to be honest with you, I only got one call that I didn't notice.
You might have taken mine. I really don't know. It's still there.
There will be not be there anymore.
Okay.
We have.
Is it? Because there was a side triangle problem right there too. So the tree was shaved. And took the sign out too. All right. Well.
Yeah, and I know many signs were in very bad shape, so we didn't keep all of them, but we have a large stack of them in the back there, so we can identify those groups, and you know, we're certainly have them available to get them back up.
Are there any? The reason I'm thinking this is it would sort of be a nice end to come to a community like I live on a court. It's a perfect opportunity for some sort of neighborhood watch or neighborhood association. You already have a sign up. Why don't we make good on it and actually do something with regard to neighborhood watch? But you've pretty much taken down a majority of those signs, Craig, or
all of them we could find.
All you could find.
I think they pretty much all have taken down.
Okay. All right. Unless there are objections, we'll suspend the rules. Mr. O'Rourke.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I think Taft Street was Katie's Riverview subdivision, and that's a. I was looking at it last week. That's a that makes up a pretty cohesive neighborhood. So you may want to look at naming that.
I've asked this before, Mr. O'Rourke, maybe you don't want to sit down. At one time, you offered to have to get that information to some folks, and Trustee Genrich, and you and I, and at least someone else from the board, mm-hmm. and volunteered to help move this forward. Do we have that information that Mr. O'Rourke was going to put together on where the sort of natural neighborhoods might exist, like he was just talking
about? We haven't sat down with that yet. When Trevor and I met with Cheryl from Green Bay,
right.
To see how they got things started. She said that they targeted those areas like Taft where they had issues come up that residents were coming in to
right.
meetings and that kind of stuff. So we've been taking the approach of trying to identify individuals first and start out with small meetings. That's how she recommended, and that they did in Green Bay, is that they send out a mailing, basically at a small meeting, even if it's only with four or five residents or something along those lines, to establish is their interest to move forward, and if there is, then we'd identify
the boundaries of
them figure out where exactly we're going to target in that neighborhood, how far we're going to go out, do some kind of mass mailing, invite the neighborhood to a larger meeting that would include everybody to try to get things up and running.
Yeah. But it might even help for that initial approach, even if it's only three or four people, if you have some history of that area saying, hey, look, you already have a neighborhood here and it was established at this time and it used to be called this. It might be a compelling reason for them to actually entertain the idea. And I know we had some volunteers from the mm-hmm. board, so maybe we get together the packet, we take the volunteers from the board, Mr. O'Rourke with his information on these natural neighborhoods, and we all approach these two or three people that you think might be interested together to try to get something going. I just think if we do mailers and we rely on a couple of people and we're too soft about it, it's going to make your job harder, and I don't think it's ever going to get off the ground. So I would recommend that we take a more direct and proactive approach and garner the resources that you have to help you with it.
The easiest map to understand is the plat map for the village from 1928 that has our neighborhoods already lined out in big blocks, and then after that they get smaller. But the one from the 1920s is a good one.
Did you give us a copy of that? I remember one with kind of strips from east to west, right?
Yeah,
that's older. That's 200 years ago. So
100
years ago.
100 years ago is far enough back. Okay.
We're in modern times.
Do you have a copy of that? Okay, thank you.
I would be happy to help with that. I thought at the time you were concerned about a quorum or something like that.
We had a few volunteers from the board.
Yep, I would be happy to.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not too worried about a quorum. We can announce these things. It's fine.
I have the list of. I didn't bring with me, but I have the names of now. We were talking about having
Okay. Any questions for DEO Lutno or comments?
Is it possible to have a meeting or an awareness level at like for people as a touch point at Austin's or at Webster Avenue Market or someplace where people when they walk in, I know in the past there have been signs saying interested in the neighborhood watch. But I mean, in the past where we've had someone actually physically there once every couple of months saying, we're here if you're interested in it, or a place where people can actually have a face to connect to.
I'm not sure I'm following you. Like someone who camps out at Webster Avenue Market?
Right. Or at Austin's. And just as Aaron said, with the idea from this board or whatever you want to call this thing that's being organized, to be able to, as a liaison, saying we're here, and handing out the information on that day on a Saturday when, people are coming through. Because I'm sure both grocery stores have, the ability to do that.
My inclination is to take a more direct, focused approach in identifying a neighborhood to start out with. Taft Street sounds like a really good one since we've had some contentious issues in that area. And go to the people who live there, to their homes. They garner the enthusiasm that way. And I think once we get a couple of neighborhoods established, then maybe we do a wider, sort of more general, anyone who walks into the grocery store will hand them information on neighborhood, on possible neighborhood watch. At least that's how I've been thinking about it. Maybe I've been thinking about it wrong.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think we need one success story.
You know, we need one neighborhood association to form. We need one sign. I mean, I love the ones in Green Bay when you drive from neighborhood to neighborhood. You're asked entering the Astor one.
Navarino.
And I think those are a great idea. I think we get one success story and get a sign posted, you know, someplace where this is this neighborhood. It'll spark some interest, and then I agree with Bob. I think once we get that one success story, we can go to Austin's and Webster Market and say, here's our success story. You could be next.
Right.
And promote it that way. But I think we need one off the ground and operating that's successful.
I do like the thought of doing something in the Webster Avenue Market area. And it's kind of a nice little community of people who walk to that grocery store. And you know, I think it might work there. And I know there have been at least some issues on the north side of Alloway with, you know, the neighborhood watch programs being perhaps needed. So, but I think we should start out with TAP, garner the resources that you have in this room, and we'll see if we can get something on the roof or on the ground.
That neighborhood would be called Farming Gardens.
Farming Gardens.
Farming Gardens.
All right. Anything further?
Sounds better than almost made it to Astor Garden.
All right, item 14, the utility rates. He's walking slow.
Oh, you must have
Why didn't you give this information before New Water gave their?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little easier to come up here and cover this. This is an overview of the utility rates. We covered this at Public Works. I wanted to cover it here so that everybody had a chance to hear this, and then you should look at in December how you want to proceed with this in terms of approvals. And I'll cover each one of the utilities here briefly, and we can talk about each one as we go forward. The water utility, in the first paragraph, when I drafted this, I was forecasting an income of about $116,000, but as we continue to get the bills in from all the water breaks, repairs, the curb and gutter work, the paving, and the landscape restoration and so forth from that, we're probably going to be closer to about a $50,000 income for the year because we've got that many expenses from last winter yet. So that's the important thing as far as this year. What I'm suggesting here for the water utility for next year, we can't change the rates because we're regulated by the Public Service Commission, but we need to go forward next year with a Public Service Commission rate filing for a couple of reasons. One is our income is going to be down next year and forecasting about $94,000 for next year, which is well below our set rate of return by the Public Service Commission. So a rate case will restore the appropriate rate for the water utility. But at this point, we're more than 5 years since the last rate case. So if the Water Authority raises rates next year or the year after, we cannot adjust our rate. We cannot use the purchase water rate, the pass-through. Whatever they raise, we can raise. We won't be able to do that until we do a PSC rate case. The other thing that we cannot do at this point is a minor rate adjustment. A minor rate adjustment is basically a two-page form. You fill it out, and you submit it to the Public Service Commission, and it's good for a rate increase that's from 1% to 3%. We can't do that either because we're 5 years since the last rate case. So my recommendation is that we file for a rate review in the second half of 2015. At that point, we will have the rate increase from the Water Authority. We know that there's going to be a rate increase in the next 2-3 years from the Water Authority because we're adjusting the debt service for the new bond. So there'll be a minor adjustment over a course of 2 or 3 years to get to that new rate. So this will allow us to do that. I did include the funds in the budget for 2015 for the accounting firm to work with us to file the rate case and the fees from the Public Service Commission. So those are included in next year's budget. So that's where we're at with the water utility. Yes.
So applying for a rate increase, that's basically what we're doing?
That's what we would be doing, yes.
It's not and then if something changes where we don't need it, we don't have to do it, correct?
Or do we have to? We could drop it. I don't see that being the case, but we did start filing a rate case with the Public Service Commission, I believe it was 2 years ago. But when we saw the preliminary numbers, we weren't going to get a rate increase, so we dropped it. And we carried forward the paperwork for 12 months, but things didn't change, and so we weren't able to refile, and so we dropped that case. So that was an example of where we did that. The reason I say I don't think that'll happen here is because we need the protection afforded us for the purchased water rate case, the purchased water rate adjustment. We need that protection. Otherwise, the Water Authority is going to raise rates, and we aren't going to be able to do anything. And you can see we're operating down at $100,000 of income, and we should be at $250,000. We haven't had a rate adjustment for 2-3 years now, at least.
And what's unfortunate is we're getting all these rate increases at once.
Yes. But however, the water utility rate adjustment I don't think will be very much. The sanitary utility is the one that we are getting hit with, and will get hit with another year or two. Stormwater utility would be one rate adjustment, but I don't think we're going to have to adjust it after we do this rate adjustment. I think we'll have some period of time there for take a breather.
Jim, the new water rates have been pretty much increasing every year for a really long time, right?
How this is our third year.
Is it 10% for 5 years? Was the projection?
We're actually going to go. So it's actually going to go 6 years.
It would have been really unlikely for us to be able to hold all the other rates at status quo or lower them during that six-year period. So it seems like they're all coming together as a perfect storm.
Yep.
But you have to remember the new water rates have been going up for a really long time.
You mean the Met?
The Met,
yeah. The water Authority has been pretty good.
It's been stable.
So Met, the guys that were here today.
Yeah. They're 10% of you.
But Dave, the guy that comes and reports on the Water Authority, we've done some really good. I mean, the last time he was here, he reported on the refinancing and how much money we were saving. So.
Yeah. Craig, how long has it even been since we've had to do a rate increase passed from the Water Authority? That's been a little.
This will be our third year now without one. Third year.
Why can't we do if our costs increase, why can't we just
because
up our
we
rates?
We are a regulated public utility. Same thing as the electric utility, WPS. When you read the headlines in the paper,
yeah.
WPS and all the things going on, we go through exactly the same thing, except we don't make the headlines.
But aren't the people who charge us, aren't they regulated? The organization, the Water Authority, aren't they regulated as well?
No. Our Water Authority,
well, that's messed
our up. Water Authority is not considered a public utility. So we do. They are not subject to the Public Service Commission rate requirements. Now, there are. That's changing.
What about Green Bay Met?
Green Bay Met is not public service regulated.
That's why I have some questions for them when they publish their budget. They're sort of this quasi-elected, but not a public utility, not following some of the rules that we have to follow. And so they start giving their folks raises in years when we're holding the line. Then I have some, and that's why I mentioned, when are the budget meetings and why aren't the representatives listed on the website? Because they're following completely different rules.
So to clarify one point on the Central Brown County Water Authority, it's been a private utility. The Public Service Commission has been asking for information and has been looking at making it a regulated utility. I'm not sure where that is at this point because it was kind of a hot item for a while and it cooled off and we haven't heard anything. So I'm not sure if that's going to change or not. The one that is regulated is Manitowoc Public Utilities, and they wholesale sell to us, so they're the ones that have to go through the rate case rather than the Water Authority.
Right.
That's where the public service comes into play.
And
I'd much rather see the Green Bay Met under the PSC.
Well, because the crazy thing is they're the ones that drive our costs, and we've got to make a great case to the PSC when the ones that drive our costs are unregulated.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because that's the sanitary utility. The rate increase to us this year from Green Bay Met will be $150,000. So they're going from 1.6 to 1.75 is our estimated bill from Green Bay Metro. In the notes that were in your packet, the letter that was authored by myself and Doug Martin from Ashwaubenon and the other third party was Matt Heckenmeyer at Green Bay, but he didn't sign the letter. One of the principal points we made to Green Bay Met was you've increased the rates by this 10% per year for two reasons. One is to build the rate to the point where it'll cover the debt service in 2017 when the system goes online. We understand that. But in increasing it over this time period, the goal was to set aside $2 to $3 million per year, which would be, in essence, making one complete payment on that project debt service. But what's happened is they haven't been able to set aside the money. And so
because they don't control
$7 million, but actually set aside something like $2.5 million, and that concerns us because that's money we paid that was to go into a reserve fund to pay for the project, but it didn't make it to the project.
So can we sue them?
Well, I did do a critique, and you actually have it in your packet. And I went over and met with their accountants on a Friday afternoon, because I was going to bring it up at their commission meeting next week, and I wanted to have a chance to know what it was and why we had these concerns. And they didn't estimate depreciation properly. They underestimated it. So when they added depreciation and it took some of the funds away, they didn't account for the debt service properly and the interest cost on the debt. And that cost some of that money. So it was basically their internal quality control, and the quality of their planning wasn't there. It wasn't as good as it should have been. And that cost us money. So that was our big concern.
And there's nothing that can hold us to the fact that they were supposed to put this money to debt service. We have nothing.
Well, we spoke to the commission on it. And we said this is why we're concerned. This is what it should have been, and this is costing us money. But you know, the question is, where do you go from here?
So the commission on December 4th is going to either approve the budget and therefore basically our rate increase.
Yeah.
And what can we do as a municipality or with other municipalities to convince the commission otherwise?
Meeting and speak, submit a letter with that request. That would be the best. There's probably a couple more steps we could take too, as far as getting more people involved.
That would be a good
thing. That would be the avenue. We have to approach the commission.
Do we know to Trustee Vandenhoven's point, do we know who's on the commission?
Oh, yeah. That information you have in your packet is the presentation that Doug Martin and I made to the commission 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
They just don't want to be bothered with us, so they don't tell us how to email them or phone call.
Okay. So do you think,
Trustee Raptor, nobody shows up to these budget meetings, or and these are some really big decisions, and
they are.
So that they get even fewer people than we do if you take out the folks who work at New Water who are in attendance at these meetings and the few public works directors, Craig, sometimes Green Bay, and sometimes DePure, I think, sends them.
A couple of industries show up.
And it's open to the public, correct?
It's open to the public at 8:30 in the morning starting a weekday. And
if we sent out an email to the 700 or 800 people that we have on our email list, letting them know that their rates are going up thanks to Metropolitan Sewer District, and that the hearing is on December 4th at 8:30, and please join us to voice your support or lack thereof. Can we do that?
long as somebody puts together the information, I will send it.
Okay.
Craig, let me ask you what's probably a really dumb question, but between us and some of our neighboring municipalities, if we entered into some kind of a joint venture, is there another option other than Green Bay Met? I mean, probably not cost effective, but
no, it really isn't. The best option that we have is to reduce our infiltration and inflow, which we've been replacing sanitary sewers since I was working on that again the last couple of days as part of our CMOM document development. Since 1999, the village has replaced a lot of sanitary sewer, which reduces the infiltration and inflow. That does cut our cost. But do we have another place to go and treat? No, we don't. We don't have an option that way.
That's the problem with monopolies.
Yeah. And what communities are involved in this in the district?
Right, our load is going to be our load.
What communities?
What municipalities are?
All of them. Everybody here is part of it.
Everybody?
In the metro area.
In Brown County?
Including Pulaski, Luxembourg. The only one that's not is Wrightstown. Everything else, Lawrence, Ledgeview, Bellevue, Howard, De Pere, Ashwaubenon, ourselves, Town of Scott, Slavico, Village of Slavico. We're all part of that.
So, Craig, when you met with them, did they explain in more detail where the money went that they didn't account for? The depreciation with the interest on the debt? Where'd it go?
Those are the big items right there. Those are the big items. That was, I think, I don't have the numbers up here, but that was $2 or $3 million right there, that difference, and that ate up that revenue.
That's where I was originally when I was asking about how their debt increased from 2013 in terms of the portion of the budget. How were they planning for this? If they didn't account for it properly, money had to go somewhere. I don't understand where it went.
To the raises?
I do have a response letter from Tom Sigmund on that, but that's really, I think, the avenue that the customers have is you budgeted for this, so why isn't the money here that was supposed to be here? And who's accountable for that? Where did it go and who's accountable for it? Because we paid for it. I mean, that to me, that's the crux of the situation. That's $3, $4, $5 million, whatever the numbers are. It's not there that should be there.
But that's not in any agreement anywhere saying that this $2 million, you know, that.
No, it's in their budgets, and it's in all the discussion we've had. And
but no agreement between.
But there's no formal written agreement, no. Because it's part of their budget process.
Yeah, I think what we should do is if the money mysteriously went away due to internal, you know, accounting errors and miscalculations and that part, you know, I think maybe you take all these letters and submit them to the newspaper and see if they got any interest in checking into this. I mean, a few million dollars is supposed to pop up in a reserve, and it's not in a reserve. It just seems to me that, you know, that's something that the newspaper might generate some interest in and running an article. And the letters between you folks are all public records anyway. It's only we're telling something out of school. So maybe we send them off to the Press Gazette and see if, you know, they got any interest in looking into it and asking the same kind of questions but telling a whole bunch of people in a newspaper article.
And it's amazing. When he showed those pictures of the bay and all the phosphorus, I thought he was showing those pictures to help us understand the importance of the R2E2 project. Yet the R2E2 project isn't going to change that picture because
won't change that.
That was a dramatic example of a rainfall. Well, so why are we spending the money outside of an EPA regulation?
They do need to do the R2 project. There's no question they have to do that project. Their solids handling system is almost 40 years old. 40 years is beyond the life that we would expect for the system that they have. so they need to replace it. And actually, when we got involved in their project in the facilities planning phase, and it was basically Alloway and the city of Green Bay, said, wait a minute, there's too much money in this project, and we want this evaluated in more detail. And that's when the whole reevaluation took place. At that point, when the reevaluation was done, we did support the project as a village. We said, we concur you need to do the project, but you brought the cost down to a much more reasonable level. We saved almost $50 million in construction costs by going through that whole evaluation process. And so it's a necessary evil. It has to happen. They have to do the project. It's just what we want is them to be as thrifty with their money, be as thrifty with our money as we are with our money that we put in our budgets here. That's what we want. And we've made some progress. We have.
But so this next year we're expecting about a 10% increase.
Yeah.
And next year we're expecting probably the same.
Another 10%.
And the following year?
My guess is another 10%. Because of this loss of this money and the decrease in BOD loading, which is upping the cost per unit, which increases our cost, that's forcing them to have another year of rate increase. So instead of 5 years of rate increases, I think we're looking at six. That was one of the questions that we asked in our budget review here a few weeks ago, and their response was, we believe we'll have to add one more year.
So we've had 3 years of?
There'll be three.
Of 10% increases?
13, 14, 15, 16, 17.
It started in 13.
Yeah.
So the rates will effectively, over 6 years, increase 60%.
Yeah.
Well, more than that, because it's 10% of the year.
It's compounded.
Compounded.
So that's something we might want to make sure that, to Randy's point, if we get an article written about that, to try and instill some enthusiasm among.
We had talked at one time about, on the website, you know, having a little chart on where your increases in rates are really going.
Well, and to try and get people to stand up and make noise, because that's what will make the difference.
But at the end of the day, like I was saying when they were here, they've got to do some of these projects, and they have to pay for them. And so the only thing we can do is, like Craig said, to have them be as frugal. And the system is not set up for them to be frugal. They don't follow the rules that we follow. They don't have an elected board, and they kind of. And so the only recourse we have is to try to hold them accountable with what, with the money that we have to provide to them. They have a monopoly. We don't have any. And that's why I asked the questions about the number 2, 3, and 4 industries, because this
it could really,
Appleton Fiber, when they pulled out, I mean, it's huge. We're going to add a year on to our rate increases because of that.
Yep.
So 2 and 3, I mean, these are business people. They're deciding whether to do the same thing. And then here we are with no industrial, and our load is going to be our load. I mean, after we realize the savings from the leak detection program, right? Our load's going to be our load. People aren't going to be flushing the toilet less or taking fewer showers, and that's the way it's going to be. And the more people that drop out, the larger the proportion of the bill that we're going to be holding. So I'm really concerned about this.
You know, and we've tried to do as much as we can between myself and Doug from Ashwaubenon and Matt from Green Bay and Scott from the Pier and Fox River Fiber and Tilmany Paper. But then collectively, we've tried to do as much as we can to focus on cost savings and so forth. And I think it's had some positive impact, but it's a big job. And this is very complex. This is not a simple thing. So.
And that's why I was harping on the raises as well. Yeah, I mean, the amount of money that they were spending on raises in the grand scheme of things wasn't huge. We were talking about multi-million dollar capital projects. But the fact that we were having to hold salaries completely steady and trim from already when we were getting close to the bone, and they were giving their folks raises. And
many people in private industry had to take salary cuts to keep their
jobs. Absolutely, and that just exemplifies the fact that they're running under, they're following different rules and running under a different system, and they have a monopoly, and so you feel like there's only... So I agree. I think it's time that we try to rally the troops and get... I'm not sure what the options are going to be, but there at least needs to be some communication to them. Craig has been doing this for years. I think I've gone for the past 2 or 3 years, Craig, to the at least one of the budget hearings.
It's been at least 5 years I've been critiquing their budget. I'm on a first-name basis with the commissioners.
But it's always it's the same.
They ask me to speak at the meeting. Right. When I see them at the golf course, they come over and chit-chat about things. So that's not, you know.
But it's the same suspects every time. It's the same five people at every meeting. And I'm not sure that we're going to get any response out of them with the same five people.
It's amazing that if you look at the structural differences between, say, the Brown County Central Water Authority, where it has local village administrators and people who actually know what the dollars and cents are of what we're working with, and how conservative they've been, and how frugal they've been, and how smart they've been about making sure that we've minded our pennies and in essence, refinanced our debt burden and brought down our interest level, and how efficient they've been as opposed to this quasi-public service commission of officials who just don't care. The only way, I think, to be able to have an influence on that is to be able to have administrators or people from the different municipalities appear at that in addition to Craig. I know Craig works very hard on this, but, I mean, others need to be there as well.
I mean, I was pointing at Craig because Craig is for the inclusion of a representative from the communities even on the commission itself. Mm-hmm. Is that you're right? It's these a lot of people that have no connection whatsoever to
the communities because
the resident the community, right? They're paying the price. Yeah. So I agree. And to be fair to them, I mean, they were telling the truth. When years ago, they made a concerted decision not to pre-save for capital projects, to build up, you know, capital project funds. That they took the approach, and it was supposedly on the recommendation of the municipalities that they were representing to pay for stuff after you build it, and the people who are using it should be paying for it. And that strategy works for a while, and then when it comes time to pay the bill, no one likes it. Mm-hmm. So, but the people who were around 30 years ago are loving it. They got by with the old infrastructure and weren't paying for anything new.
Besides the avenue of focusing on where, you know, the set-aside reserves for the project, that whole issue, there is one other area that comes to mind, and that is what the significant industrial users were working on with the Chamber of Commerce. And I forget his name, but the fellow that was in charge of the Chamber of Advance.
Red Money.
Yeah. They were approaching the commission to add new additional members to the commission, and they would be customers. And I think that's a wise effort. And that was... And I was involved in that a little bit because the industrial users asked me for, is there precedent for that? Has it been done before? And we did a little research and we gave them some fairly significant examples where Milwaukee Metro, for example, is all the communities. And actually the chairman of the commission is from one of the smallest communities. So they're all elected officials or officials within the communities. They're not an independent party that doesn't have a vested interest in the ownership of the facility. So there's the best example around. And so that's something that could be moved forward, and that would be probably the best thing you could do.
So who decides the makeup of the commission?
It's the state.
It is?
Well, it's a chartered organization, state statute. Who makes up the commission, that's determined by the county executive and the county board.
What is?
So Tri-Streckenbach is the one that appoints the commissioners.
So then we should be in touch with him.
And he actually is, he knows what...
Yeah, well, Craig and I have talked to him.
He's knowledgeable on what we're doing. Let me put it that way.
So what would be the first step in the process of supporting the attempt to go in that direction?
I think two things. One is to remake these points at the budget hearing, and number two is to work with TriStrike. Those are the two
things. In terms of adding commission vacancies, does that have to go through the state, or does the county board get to say we want two more people?
Well, no, I'll take that back. If you're replacing a commissioner, that's local, county board. But if you're adding, it has to go back to the state. Yeah. Because that would be the charter. I think they were talking about adding four customers and making it a 9-member board. I think that's what they're doing. I have that information. I just don't recall exactly what the deal was. But it kind of died out when advanced kind of.
I think the terms of the commissioners are on the website as well.
Yeah.
When their terms are going to be expiring.
I was just going to say, how often is a turnover on that board?
Every year there's one.
Every year there's one. And what's the basis on which that person is renewed or replaced?
The county executives.
I think that's a discussion between the county executive and the executive director of Sigma. I think that there's a lot of discussion about that. And with the commissioner as well.
Troy knows about our concerns, but it would not be a bad idea to have anyone let him know what.
Yeah.
Reiterate what the concern is.
Let me go back to the last two items here and just cover this briefly so that we can respond to this. The sanitary utility, wastewater utility. Green Bay Met charges will increase by about $150,000 for this next year. If we do not adjust the rate, we'll run a deficit of $152,000. So the rate increase from them we need to pass through as a rate adjustment. If we pass it through as a rate adjustment like we've calculated in this handout, we probably will have an income of about $58,000 is what I show here. Our goal is to maintain an income of about $50,000. If you recall, I think 3-4 years ago, when we started to get the Green Bay Met rate increases, we looked at our utilities and said, we're spending money on stormwater treatment, Green Bay Met charges are going up, the Water Authority has the rate increases because we were going to the new rate as this system was going online. And we decided we wanted to maintain a $50,000 income in every one of the utilities. So we at least have a little cushion. Theoretically, it should be more, but we wanted to have at least $50,000. So we had a little cushion. And to do this in the sanitary utility, it's about a 10% increase from Green Bay Met. But our calculations show that the rate increase would be 6.7% when we put our whole budget together for the utility. And what would happen is we would need to increase our fixed charge from $7 to $7.50 per meter equivalent, and that's because of the debt service from the projects. So we always want to cover our debt service with a fixed charge, so that would go from $7 to $7.50. But our volume charge would decrease to $1.12. from the current $1.23. Green Bay Met charge would stay at $4. I'm looking here, I don't see where I have their volume charge listed. But anyway.
Craig, what does that translate into for the average customer? That adjustment of the meter equivalent with the decrease in the price per thousand?
Well, on this page right here, which would be the fourth page of the handout, over on the side, you'll see our current rate is about $32.38 per month, and it would go to $34.54 is what it would go to in 2015. That's for a customer using 4,500 gallons per month. That's our average.
Okay, thank you.
And the rate would be, and we, if you recall, last in 2014, we broke out GBMSD separate from Alloway. So it says Alloway Sewer and GBMSD Sewer.
Right.
So we do bill them separately.
And
the rates would be the $4 for GBMSD per thousand and $1.12 for us per thousand. So that's what would show up on that billing card. This is a kind of a situation where we really don't have don't have an option. We have to do this because otherwise we're going to be operating at a deficit and we don't have a big cushion in reserve. So we have to do that to make sure that we stay in the black.
Do we have reserves?
I don't have the number right here in front of me, but I think it's about $200,000, somewhere in that range. So that's all we carry as a reserve.
And what do we do with
it? We have it. It's available in the audit. I just don't remember what the number is. I didn't bring it to that meeting. Okay. But it's not large. We wanted to keep $400,000. Same as the stormwater utility. We want to keep $400,000. And the reason for that is if we have an emergency that's significant, we have some money. And we do have that happen. The water utility is experiencing that right now because of the winter.
Rainy day fund, literally. Just
yeah.
That's too much for reserves.
And then in the stormwater utility, I am recommending a 25-cent rate increase. I've recommended that for a couple of years. But the reason is, If you look at it in the simplest sense, back in 2004 when we formed the utility, we charged $6.47 per ERU. And now in 2015, we'd be at $7.50, so that's a dollar increase over 10 years. The dollar increase to $7.50 is break-even. We're not really generating income. That's break-even. And if you go to the last page of the handout, is the spreadsheet calculations. That's this table. And right at the bottom, you see the 743 and the 743 with kind of a faint yellow on there. That is the rate we have to break even. At 750, we generate about $10,000 in income. But that's the break even, $7.43. This is the spreadsheet that we use. And between Clara and I, Clara is the expert on running the spreadsheet. I just generate numbers. Mm-hmm. But we resurrected all of the data that we had in the system, the spreadsheets, the analyses, and so forth, went through and tuned them up and made sure we had them current so that we were both comfortable that when we run these numbers, we get the right data. And so when you look at it, you can see what's projected with no rate increase, what's projected with the rate increase, and that 743 is the number that we have to have.
So what's the total for the average household for all the utilities if we were to do what we think we need to
next
do?
Year,
and what percent is that?
Remember the water I think is about 32. The storm would be, the sanitary would be 34, so that's 66. 750 for this stormwater would be at 73.50, and 375 for the fire charge.
And what rate, what percent increase would that be? where we are now?
That's got to be between 2 and 3%. It's got to be around 2% somewhere in that area. I can run the numbers and email them out to you, but it's got to be 2%.
That's just on the alloy
side.
Pardon? That's just on the alloy side.
What was the fire? 375?
Yeah, that's the direct bill on the fire charge.
And these two increases come to like $2.41, so $2.16 on the fixed charge and a quarter on the ERU. And if we go from the average
32 to 34, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, we're going from 32.38 to 34.54.
That's 2.16.
So that's roughly $2.20, and then we're adding a quarter, so $2.50.
So for
75 bucks, so $2.50 divided by 75, roughly.
So about 3.5%.
2%, a little less than 2%.
No, it's more than 2%.
We're going up by about
2.5 bucks out of 75 is three plus percent, right?
Probably about 3.5.
Okay. I have questions for Craig. When do you need a decision on this, Craig?
In December.
Before end of
just before the end of the calendar year, or?
Yeah, either a meeting in December is fine.
Right now, I think we only have one scheduled. Is that right? Fred?
Well, we have two. The 18th is on the docket, but...
Oh, we have two scheduled. Okay. All right. Any questions for Craig? Any comments? Thanks, Craig.
Sorry if there's one.
Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, good news. We'd be happy to stay around much longer. is there a motion to... Your motion to adjourn, Trustee Harris, second Trustee Guest. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried for adjourn. Thanks, folks.